Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Good morning. Welcome to Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Joe Beamer with you for the next 2 hours, and let's get right into it. Thursday morning, we heard District Attorney John Flynn give the results of an investigation into the disappearance of Buff State student Sanaya Dennis. And joining us is District Attorney John Flynn. John, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
John, now, walk us through this, because before Thursday, what we knew of the investigation, it was looking for a missing student. Walk us through the beginning of the investigation and when it turned to what you announced on Thursday.
Sure. Well, I wasn't involved in the beginning of the investigation. The investigation started on, you know, Saturday night going into Sunday morning when this, you know, poor girl apparently took her own life. Investigation by Buff State got into, in full-blown mode, quite frankly, on that Monday, which would have been the 26th of April. At that time, you know, Buff State was handling it along with the New York State Park Police. They didn't call our office until Wednesday, you know, some 3 days later, and that's when we got involved. So again, I wasn't really involved initially in the investigation. It's my understanding that yes, initially they were looking at as a missing person. There was no indication like immediately that it was an apparent taking of one's own life. They didn't get that information until we actually reached out and spoke to some of her friends, who then put us in touch with a couple of her other friends who had various text messages from her that showed that, she apparently was talking about taking her own life and wanted to take her own life. And then that's when it kind of turned from a missing persons into, an apparent suicide. So, again, it probably took, after we got it on Wednesday, we got actively involved. We got the FBI involved. We got the customs involved. We got dogs out there. We got helicopters out there. We got boats out there. And so, it kind of got in a full-blown mode at the end of that week.
Now, John, on Thursday, you talked about the text back and forth. She was even playing video games with a friend in New York City. Did that gentleman get in touch with you about the contact back and forth, or is that something you had to find out through phone records?
No, we found it out through phone records. Yeah, no, the all of our investigation that led us to, there were two gentlemen in the New York City area that were involved in this thing from the standpoint of communicating with Sanaya on the day that she went to Niagara Falls, and we got that information, as I said, on Thursday through good old-fashioned police work. Neither one of them reached out to us.
And there was also a point you said that she had taken a Snapchat picture near the falls. Now, was that something that someone saved to their phone and sent to you, or did you have to get that from Snapchat, the company that puts on Snapchat?
We got that from one of her friends. I don't know if we had to track that friend. I can't remember if we had to track that friend down or if that friend volunteered it. But now that I think about it, top of my head, we may have gotten a lead from a family member as to who that person might have been. So, we good old fashioned police work here by just talking to people, finding out who her friends were, finding out who she talked to, led us to, get various pieces of evidence.
Now, John, on Thursday, you gave the press conference, and I can't imagine that was an easy press conference to give. Why was it that you went into such detail of this investigation and the findings?
Because there's obviously going to be a narrative out there, Joe, that, how can you rule that it's a suicide if you do not have a body? And those who say that are technically correct. And again, it's important to note that I have not ruled anything definitively a suicide. All I said on Thursday is that the evidence that we have right now leads us to believe or appears to be one taking their own life. I never at any point on Thursday, and I don't now 3 days later, sit here and say definitively that this poor girl took her own life. I can't say that, Joe, because I don't have a body. So obviously, when you don't have a body, and in addition to a body, I don't have a final autopsy. So, unless I have a body and unless I have a final autopsy, I cannot definitively say anything. So obviously, that narrative is going to be out there. Her members of her family think that. And I can't blame them. As a father, I would think the same thing. I could never accept that. So I felt that because I did not have a body and because there was just so much, rumor and media attention and talk about this, that, I had to, set the record straight from a sense of this is what I know, this is what we have so far. This is what the facts are and the evidence leads us to believe. And, it was important to let the family know that, which I did the day before, okay? I let the family know all of this on Wednesday, and I gave them, almost 24 hours in order to tell their friends and family so that their friends and family wouldn't hear it from me, on TV. So I told the family on Wednesday, laid it all out to them, gave them almost 24 hours to tell their friends, and their other family members, so they won't be surprised. And then I felt it important to tell the public because, of the attention that it gave and because of the outpouring of support and love that this girl got, not just from the Buff State community, but from the entire Buffalo community. So, I had to be straight and upfront with not only the family, but with the public too.
I'm sure you don't want to go into too much detail, but what was that conversation like with the family, the Dennis family, the day before?
Well, like I said on Thursday, it didn't go great. I'll be totally honest with you. I mean, it didn't go great in the sense that like any parent, and again, I can put myself in their shoes as a father of five, okay? Without a body, how am I going to accept that my daughter did this? First of all, as a parent, you're never going to accept fully that your daughter could do this, that your daughter's life that you've been such a part of, could say to themselves that I want to take my own life. I mean, just getting to that point is just extremely difficult as a parent. And so you compound that with the fact that, there's no body. And so obviously, it's very, very difficult for, parents to accept that. And I don't blame them for not accepting it. And I understand completely for not accepting it. I just had to be upfront and straight with them. And I was, and my staff was, I should admit my staff was. And so, they just had a difficult time accepting it.
Going back to the investigation, you mentioned the two guys in New York City. Now, you questioned them. I believe you said the FBI and New York police also questioned these two, and they were cleared right from the beginning?
Yeah. They were cleared in the sense of that they were not in the Buffalo area, that they had an alibi, being that they were physically in the New York City area. One was, you know, to be specific, one was in Yonkers, and the other one, I believe, was in Brooklyn or Bronx. But they were both in the New York City area, you know, the weekend of the 25th, 24th, 25th. So, you know, they were not there at all, present at the scene. So, yes, the FBI spoke to the ex-boyfriend, and then we got NYPD to go speak to the other male friend.
And with the camera on the two buses that she took and also the last camera she was on at Niagara Falls, I have to imagine you guys probably looked at days of tape to rule out that she ever walked by those cameras again, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and we canvassed the area too, Joe, around the entrance there to that Goat Island Bridge Road there. You know, there's a Red Roof Inn around there. There's a couple of Quality Inn around there. There's a couple of little shops around there. So, you know, not only did we canvass, those particular videotapes, but we also, you know, canvassed the entire area, looking for any footage, looking for any video of her, and just, you know, again, to see if she somehow walked out of there, or, you know, again, it'd be difficult to see inside a car if she drove out of there. The problem is that, you know, again, I found this in the course of this investigation. The one thing I found kind of surprising was the lack of cameras on Goat Island. I mean, you know, you would think that there would be a ton of cameras just on Goat Island, itself, you know, because again, I don't have statistics, but I got to imagine that a lot of people in the past have, you know, jumped off the falls, you know. So I was a little bit surprised by the lack of cameras that were, on Goat Island and, you know, in the vicinity there. But I'm told by the state that they're in the process now of getting more, and that's good news.
And I know I'm kind of going backward, but at Buff State, you said that she had thrown some stuff away before leaving. I know you don't want to say exactly what it was, but what led you to believe that kind of gave a signal that she wasn't coming back to Buff State? And how long into the investigation did you guys discover what she had thrown away?
Well, as soon as Buff State got the video camera of her coming out of the elevator on the ground floor of their dorm, and then there was video camera in the hallway of the dorm that she was in, and which showed her, and then there was an additional video camera that was outside of the dorm. So again, this kind of goes back to my point about Goat Island. I mean, at Buff State alone, you know, in that one particular dorm, you got a camera in the elevator, you got a camera in the lobby of the dorm, and then you got a camera outside. So you got three cameras in a very closed area of the vicinity at Buff State, and yet at Niagara Park there at Goat Island, you got like one camera, you know, that shows like the entrance going into Goat Island. So, you know, me talking about this kind of makes my last point I made. But in any event, the camera outside the dorm showed her walking to a garbage can and throwing away and putting her hand in the garbage can. You couldn't tell really on the video, but then they the Buff State police then went into the garbage can and retrieved it, retrieved the items. And again, it's tough for me to really answer your question, Joe, without alluding to what it may be or what the general category may be, and I don't even want to go there, but I can say that, they were items that, just would lead a reasonable person to believe that she was not returning to the dorm, and that's really kind of, Joe, as far as I can go.
Now, the what you said on Thursday is, it's a presumption that she did go over the falls. Where does the investigation go from here? Because you did also say that, you don't have a body. You can't do an autopsy. Is there still going to be some type of search for Saniya Dennis around that area where you said the dogs were wanting to jump into the falls when they were following her scent?
Yeah. So, yeah, the park police are going to, occasionally look around there, and we're going to have a helicopter up. We were doing it 4 or 5 times a day leading up to Thursday. I don't think it's going to be that much anymore now, but whether it's once a day or every other day, there's still going to be some presence. The problem, Joe, is going to be is that, and I said it on Thursday, and I hated to say it then, and I really hate to say it again, especially on Mother's Day here, because, it's awful talking about this on Mother's Day, but, again, you got to do what you got to do. We may never find the body, Joe. I mean, that's what's really gut-wrenching about this is that, the area there at the base of the falls, as we all know from looking at the photographs, if you look at the Horseshoe Falls on Canada, and vice the American Falls on our side, there's a distinct difference. Not only the horseshoe shape obviously is different, but the main difference obviously is all the rocks at the bottom of our falls. And so, those rocks, Joe, are huge, and they're multiple, and they're jaggedy, and they go deep down into the water, and they crop up, obviously, as we all see by the photographs of my being there here, by living in Buffalo. I hate to even say this, Joe, but there's a very good chance that this poor girl's body could get stuck in those jagged rocks down there and, never surface. And that is the horror of this thing from a mother's perspective here on Mother's Day.
John, a very tragic story. I know it's not easy talking about. I really appreciate you joining me this morning.
No problem, Joe. Have a good one, buddy.
Thanks, you too. District Attorney John Flynn with the investigation into Sanaya Dennis. When we come back, we're talking with Jessica Pirro, CEO at Crisis Services of Buffalo. And it is Mental Health Awareness Month, the month of May. If you or someone you No, might be at risk of suicide, there is help. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. We'll be back after.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
This. Welcome back. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Joe Beamer with you until noon today. Joining us this segment, we have Jessica Pirro from Crisis Services of Buffalo. Jessica, good morning.
Good morning.
Last segment, we heard from District Attorney John Flynn and his results of the investigation into the disappearance of Sanaya Dennis. And, looking at the text messages that were sent in that that situation and her language to her friends in New York City, when you look at that, could you see signs, and what signs should a parent who has a kid away from school look for that they are contemplating suicide or showing signs of something that needs to be addressed?
Yeah, I think the messages that we heard through the report of the situation, did highlight a young woman in distress. And I think that what we need to take away from this case and this information that was publicly shared around her very challenging hours that we were, that was shared with us, is to do the best we can to be supportive, to listen, and be non-judgmental with someone in that moment. I think for parents across, our community and actually nationwide, because this particular case has gotten such attention, is really just a moment to remind ourselves to just check in with each other, check in with our children, young and adults, check in with our loved ones, to just say, you know, I just want you to know I'm here for you. If you need to talk, please know that I'm here to listen. When someone's in crisis at that level, it can be really scary to reach out, because those thoughts that they're having are scary. And so we just want to make sure that we continue to provide a compassionate and empathetic community, family members, and to just assure that we'll be there to help them through that moment and that crisis the best we can in when we're faced with it.
What do you say to parents that are sending a child to school maybe next fall, and they hear this kind of story, you know, multiple times of a student in college, you know, was depressed or had suicidal thoughts? What's the message the parents should leave to their kids? And when their kid is in college, you know, a lot of people think if it's just over the phone, just over text, they can't really connect with them like they can in a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, those are some great questions. I think for parents of college-age students, and I was one myself several years ago, one of the things I explored with the campus was to understand what their counseling center program was like and what their response to students in crisis is. So as a parent, I understood, you know, if there was a situation I had or I was concerned about, who do I call? And if the school was to identify something, what was their process and their protocols? So those are things that parents can inquire about as their students are exploring campuses and colleges, and really talk through that process. I think planning with your children is important. And what I mean by that is talking with your kids to say, okay, if you're having a hard time, what are you going to do? Who are you going to call? What information do you need? What information should we have programmed in your phone, either for the counseling center, for a family member or a friend, or the local crisis hotline in that community, wherever that student is? Being planful ahead really is helpful, because like I had said earlier, when we're kind of in a crisis moment, it can be very challenging to make a decision and kind of be creative of what we need to do, because our thinking gets very restricted. So as a family, kind of planning that out ahead can be very helpful. And I do agree. I know it's hard when students are away, our kids are away, and it is through text or just a one-answer response. But it's maybe just saying, you know, at least, you know, a certain number of times a week or once a week, let's FaceTime. I just want to have eyes on you. And that's okay. I mean, I think that's a real show of just, you know, I want to check in and make sure you're doing okay. So some of it is planning it ahead, talking about it as a family ahead. And these don't just apply to college students. I think with any of us, if it's sisters, brothers, mothers, fathers, whoever it is, I think these are serious conversations we can have as families and plan those out. And if we need them, then we have a solid steps that we can take that are going to help us in those moments.
You know, in 2021, it seems like everyone's on social media, obviously, especially younger high school kids and college students. And a lot of communication is through someone's news feeds, through someone's tweets. Is there something to look for, say you're concerned about someone, in the way they're posting on social media, or maybe lack thereof on social media, that would put up a red flag that would make you, you know, think, hey, maybe I should call this person, maybe I need to reach out?
Yes, I think paying attention to language is really important when we talk about someone in crisis. You know, so if you're starting to see comments where somebody is just saying, I can't take this anymore, you know, the world would be better off without me, for example, or, you know, I'm just done with this, or, you know, things like that that are statements like that. Those are things to reach in and say, hey, I've noticed these comments. You might want to do it with a direct message or a call to them. And say, you know, I'm just concerned. What's going on? How can I help you? I think I've seen on social media, and I've seen this with you know, adults as well, that when I see something like that, I do reach out to that person and say, you know, I'm concerned of how, you know, this was presented. You might have just been blowing off steam, but I want to check in and make sure that there isn't anything more going on. I think we have to be willing to dive into that with people and reach out to them. I think it's important to know, though, with social media, especially if there's any suicidal concerns, there are ways through all the platforms that you can report those concerns that they might be suicidal. And then there's protocols and procedures that all of the social media outlets have and how to manage that with that particular person. So pay attention to that information on your social media of how you can report a concern of somebody who's suicidal. You're able to do that, and they have some really great protocols in place to try to intervene with that individual as well. But with that being said, if it's somebody locally here in our community of Buffalo and Erie County, you can also reach out to us at Crisis Services. Our 24-hour hotline is 834-3131. I will say social media is a new way that we are getting information about concerns for loved ones and friends. And so sometimes we might get that same situation where they send us a message about this particular post, what can we do? And we'll do our best to try to find that person, find information for them to contact them and do some intervention.
I know this is probably going to be a case-by-case question, but is there a type of language or persistent language that if you have a kid in college and they keep bringing something up or they keep talking in a way that's concerning, that you would say, okay, it's time to take that kid out of school and bring them back home?
Oh, that is a case-by-case situation. I think it really depends on their ability to manage their daily living every day. So, for example, if you have a student that is maybe heading into a depressive episode, for example, and they're unable to get themselves up to go to class, or they're not going to class, they're not eating, maybe they're not sleeping well. Again, these might be things that you might not know, but you might have to inquire either with a roommate or maybe residence life to check in with them. It's hard to say if just bringing them home is the answer. I think that has to be a conversation with that young adult, because some of the structure of school can be very healthy and helpful. It just depends on where they're at and are they able to pull themselves to be able to do the daily living skills that they need to do, such as taking care of themselves, eating, sleeping, and actually participating in their schooling, or do they need to have more monitoring? And I think that's where the decision might come into play, is if you have somebody who is at a higher risk for suicide, for example, you want to have some good safety planning in place to help them. And that might also be monitoring them at home. So it is a case by case. Every individual is going to be different. I do think that conversations about what they need and doing some safety planning and even ideas of how to, what to do when they're having a hard moment, who to call, or what are some, activities that might help them lift them up out of it a bit, are things that you could do with your college student and your child. So I can't say like it is an answer for every case, because being in school and having the socialization of school and their friends can be a very healthy protective factor, and that can be helpful for somebody sometimes when they're in those moments as well.
May being a Mental Health Awareness Month, what do you say to someone right now who might be listening in, they're noticing that they're having struggles, but they don't want to talk about it, they don't feel comfortable talking about it, with May being Mental Health Awareness Month, what's your message to them?
Well, first I want to say they're not alone. There are so many individuals in our community that live with their mental illness very successfully, and they received help, they reached out for help. There's many people who are living with their struggles alone, and I think the message is you're not alone, and there is help to help you through this, because it's scary. And, I know it takes a lot to make that call to somebody to say, hey, I need help. It takes a lot of courage, and I want people to see that reaching out is a strength, you deserve that. You deserve that because it helps you to understand what's going on for you, understand what other tools or resources could be brought into your life to help you feel better, and decide kind of what are some options to explore. I think one of the things throughout this you know, through historical, we're dealing with historical stigma around mental illness for sure and mental health conditions in general. But I think that through this past year and really the larger conversation about us taking care of our mental health and our self-care is something that I hope people realize is 100% a responsibility for all of us to care for each other, but is also not a weakness. It's a strength to reach out. It's a strength to know that there's people like you, and you're not alone, and we want to be able to talk it through and help you through those difficult times. So we really encourage people to reach out, and Crisis Services, you know, hotline staff are there 24/7, 834-3131. And also just an important point, you don't have to be in a heightened crisis to call us. And I think it's important if you're feeling different, if you're feeling off, if you're struggling, you can call the hotline and you can actually talk with our counselors anonymously to start to really see what we can do to help and give some guidance and support. If it rises to a heightened crisis, then there's different processes that we do to intervene in that situation. But we want people to know that we're just one phone call away, and you know, we want them to be able to feel better. And really start to build those strengths that they need to manage through those struggles.
Jessica, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much for having me and continuing this important conversation.
Definitely, definitely. Jessica Pirro from Buffalo Crisis Services. Also earlier in the week, Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski talked with Carl Shallowhorn. Here is part of that interview.
Carl Shallowhorn is our guest live this morning, a mental health advocate with Carl Shallowhorn Consulting. Carl, you know, as a region, I think we're all feeling collective loss over the tragedy of Saniya Dennis, who is presumed to have taken her life, the missing Buffalo State College student. You know, it's so hard to come to grips with something that is so permanent over really what should have been a temporary problem, right?
Certainly, and I, first of all, I want to extend my condolences to Saniya's family. What we know is that many times when people have feelings of suicide, they are essentially caught in the grips of some pain that they feel is, like you said, permanent. But we know that with the proper help, with the proper assistance, with the proper intervention, they can work through those issues and get past that. But the key is that that intervention is needed immediately.
It strikes me listening to what was laid out yesterday in the process of events that, you know, people around her seem to have that concern. And, you know, when I heard what was happening, it sounded to me like they were taking action. You know, we heard of a call that was sent out, a voicemail left that, you know, hey, I need to hear from you or else I'm calling 911. I'm getting some help. And that seems like people who are very concerned, who are paying attention, yet it was too late. I mean, does that speak to the speed in which a crisis like this can evolve, or what can we learn from something like that?
Certainly, I think, you know, we can always look in retrospect and see in a situation like this what could have been done and what should have been done. But I think, when we have something like this that happens, immediate action is needed. If we have any fear that a person is at risk of taking their life, we need to contact appropriate authorities. Of course, we know that that was a distance involved for people in New York City, but there's still the possibility of calling the New York National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or other resources in the Buffalo area like Crisis Services to alert them, and then the process could begin, or even 911 for that matter, to let the process begin to search for the person, to try to find the person. So, and we know there was time. There was time that took place. So I think the whole idea is that we don't want to just try to, delay, and not delay, but try to, take measures in our own hands, but turn over to those who are properly prepared to handle it.
You know, I keep thinking about her family, and I keep thinking about her friend, the one she was communicating with at the end. Is guilt over not being able to help her something that's going to haunt him and others who would be in a similar situation?
Well, I would say most certainly. I mean, if it were me, I'd feel very guilty about this, knowing that. And he did try, I think, you know, from, once again, I can't presume, but I'm thinking he probably did try to the best of his ability to do what he could. But to lose a friend like that, there is certainly and the fathomable guilt. But there are places and resources to get help if you need it for grieving and to work through those things and also counseling. But yes, guilt, I'm sure, would be weighing on him very heavily.
You mentioned help, and we talk about ways to get help all the time. And I think maybe one of the barriers to this is we don't really know what that help looks like. What happens when you call, one of these crisis hotline numbers, or if you seek out help? What does that look like, and how does that work?
Well, for example, if someone calls crisis services, they will. Of course, the first thing you do is you get a hold of one of their, counselors that's on the line, one of their specialists that's on the line, and they could then potentially dispatch a team to go out, a mobile crisis team, to go out to do a welfare check on someone. And that's probably one of the first steps that will happen. Spectrum Human Services also has an outreach that can also be contacted. So we know there's crisis teams that are mobile that will go out to see someone, to make sure they're okay. If necessary, 911 can also be called and call the local law enforcement. But one of those places can be called to make sure a person's okay. And if an intervention is needed, then that person can be taken to whether it be ECMC or somewhere where they can get that assistance they need.
You know, when is the stigma going to end over this? We've been talking about it seemingly forever. You know, when someone needs help, that they are ashamed to ask for it, it seems all too often.
Yes, stigma is a major barrier when it comes to people seeking help. I would say it will end when we are more comfortable talking about mental health. I'm the chair of the Erie County Anti-Stigma Coalition. We ask people to go to our webpage, letstalkstigma.org. We have resources. We have tips on how to start the conversation. And so when someone is willing to open up and talk about what's going on with them, they're more likely to get the help that they need. But also stigma in general is something that I think we deal with as a society because we're uncomfortable talking about mental health. There's a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of fear about mental health. But if we normalize it, if we get people talking about their stories and talking about the fact that it's not a weakness, it's a sign of a strength actually to get help, perhaps we'll be on a better road.
That, again, was Carl Shallowhorn from earlier this week with Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski. Before that, Jessica Pirro joined me from Buffalo Crisis Services. Their 24-hour hotline is 834-3131. Also, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. You can also text a crisis counselor at 741-741. My thanks also to District Attorney John Flynn, who joined us in the first segment. When we come back, Professor Jacob Neuheisel will be joining us to talk about politics in general, especially today's politics. It is Hardline on WBEN.